Married at First Sight. Chapter 4001. Catherine said, "I'll do my best to persuade them to leave. I'll visit my father and my two sisters-in-law in a few days and ask them to talk some sense into my brothers. If they're still stubborn, then just let it be." Liberty replied, "Do what you need to do. I'll turn a blind eye." It wasn't that Catherine didn't care about family. She did. But her brothers never valued it. What else could Catherine do? She explained, "I'm not the type to hurt innocent people. If they behave, avoid scheming, and leave Jensberg for the Janssen family estate, I only want half of what they currently have. Leaving them with half their property wouldn't leave Marco and the others destitute." It was still a gesture of respect for Catherine. Catherine added, "But they won't back down. They'll keep playing games. You're being merciful by asking for only half." Although they had been reunited for only 2 or 3 years, Catherine knew her brothers far too well. Their mother, Clarissa, had refused to help Catherine deal with them. Despite her harsh reputation, Clarissa couldn't bring herself to act against her own sons, leaving Catherine to shoulder the burden alone. Catherine wasn't cold-hearted, but her brothers had always hated her. They had no love for her then, and they had none now. In fact, they would rather see her dead. She was willing to ask Liberty for leniency because her mother had entrusted most of her property to Catherine before her passing. The two women spent hours talking in Catherine's office. Later, Catherine gave Liberty a tour of the Farrell Group offices to familiarize her with the environment. While they couldn't cover everything in one day, Catherine promised to show her the major subsidiaries over the next few days so Liberty could understand the full scope of the group's operations. Meanwhile, Marco and his brothers left the Farrell Group and drove straight to the Janssen family estate, a trip of several dozen miles. After the new year, Holden had moved from Jensberg back to his hometown to retire. He hoped to set an example for his sons, encouraging them to maintain their current assets and return home to build a stable life. Holden himself hadn't received any share of the sizable inheritance left by his late wife. Instead, he had worked to prepare his sons for a secure retirement. As for the shares Clarissa's children and grandchildren were entitled to, Catherine had handled them with caution. She entrusted the inheritance meant for her nieces and nephews to their mothers, her sisters-in-law, rather than her brothers. Catherine knew her brothers were unreliable. She feared they would misuse the inheritance to support their mistresses instead of safeguarding their children's futures. It's safer in the hands of their mothers, Catherine thought. Even if they don't use it, at least it won't be wasted. Catherine had read online about the stark difference between wealthy parents. A mother with money spends it on her children. A father with money uses it to have more children, picking the most capable one to succeed him. The observation felt painfully accurate in her own family. Catherine hadn't released the inheritance her brothers were entitled to not out of greed, but to protect them from themselves. She planned to wait until they exhausted their current assets and faced the consequences of their recklessness. Only then would she distribute what their late mother had left for them. This way, her brothers wouldn't end up in complete ruin. But instead of appreciating her intentions, they accused her of forging their mother's will and demanded an equal division of the inheritance. When she refused, they took her to court. Who was afraid of whom? Catherine wasn't. She had never forged a will and wasn't intimidated by their threats. Meanwhile, Holden remained at his Janssen family estate, living under constant stress as he navigated the never-ending turmoil among his children. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4002. Chapter 4002. In the Janssen family, Holden was the one everyone revered. Only when he returned to his family's old estate could he hold his head high, like a victorious general coming home from battle. The Janssen estate was a self-built villa complete with a swimming pool, basketball court, garden, and pavilion. While it couldn't compare to the grandeur of the Farrell family mansion, in their hometown, Holden's home was considered a symbol of luxury. Hearing the sound of a car approaching, Holden, who was lounging in the yard enjoying the sun, turned to the nanny caring for him. "Go check who's here." It might be the young masters. The nanny nodded and stepped outside. Moments later, Holden spotted his three sons walking toward him, one after the other. His initial reaction was a deep frown, followed by a long sigh. Pinching the bridge of his nose, he felt a familiar pang of disappointment. In that moment, he finally understood why his late wife had often been impatient and disheartened by their sons. These three were a constant source of worry. He had repeatedly analyzed their situation, urging them to let go of their obsession with the feral group. He'd explained countless times that if they focused on building their lives in their hometown, they could still lead prosperous lives. But they never listened. During the new year, he had accompanied them back to their hometown, hoping they'd finally see reason. For a moment, he thought they had. But as soon as the feral group resumed work after the holidays, the three sons returned to Jensburg. Holden was so furious that he spent hours cursing at home. To make matters worse, his ungrateful daughter had announced that the feral family and the feral group would officially be handed over to Liberty after the new year. If no one challenged this, Liberty would become the new head of the feral family. Given the long-standing feud between their families, Holden knew Liberty would never make life easy for his sons. Catherine, who hadn't grown up with them and shared a different set of values, had aligned herself with Liberty. Her loyalty to him, coupled with the respect she commanded in Wiltspoon, had ensured that Liberty's rise to power went unchallenged. "Dad! Dad!" Hearing his sons greet him one after another, Holden's expression soured. His face, lined with age, stretched into a scowl as he said, "Shouldn't you three be working? It's the start of a new year. What are you doing here? Or has the feral group suddenly decided to give you an extended vacation?" His tone was biting, laced with sarcasm. Marco, the eldest, sat down next to him. Sage, the youngest, glanced at the nanny and motioned for her to leave. They didn't want her overhearing their conversation. Once the nanny was gone, Sage was the first to speak. "Dad, cut the sarcasm. You need to step in and deal with your precious daughter and those old folks. None of them are on our side." Noel, the middle son, chimed in with frustration evident in his voice. "We've approached them privately. We promised them plenty, offered benefits, gave them generous New Year gifts, and they acted like they'd support us. But the moment they were in front of Catherine and Liberty, they folded faster than a cheap chair. No resistance whatsoever." The three brothers had hoped to rally support against Liberty's rise to power. They'd reached out to the older generation of the clan, offering bribes disguised as holiday gifts and promises of future rewards. For a moment, it seemed like they'd succeeded. But when it came time for action, their so-called allies showed no spine. The brothers were livid. Not only had their efforts failed, but the money they'd spent had gone to waste. "They took everything we offered but didn't lift a finger to help," Noel continued, his voice rising. "Did Liberty promise them more than we did? If so, they should at least give back what we gave them. Taking our benefits and doing nothing, what kind of loyalty is that?" The frustration in the air was palpable. Their plan had backfired spectacularly, leaving the brothers to fume over their wasted resources and betrayal. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4003. Chapter 4003. The older generation of the feral family did accept the gifts and benefits sent by the three brothers. They felt slighted by Clarissa in the past, so taking what the brothers offered felt like compensation, something they were owed. However, as for siding with the brothers and helping them undermine Liberty's rise to power, they had no intention of doing so. What could the three brothers do about it without evidence? The gifts were framed as simple New Year offerings from the younger generation to their elders, perfectly normal and customary. Holden, upon hearing his son's complaints, smacked one of them lightly on the arm and let loose his frustration. "How many times have I told you this?" he snapped, his tone heavy with exasperation. "But no, you won't listen. It's like my words go in one ear and out the other. Let me remind you, yes, you and Catherine are siblings, but your last name is Jansen, not Farrell. The Farrell family has upheld their clan rules for over a century, and they're not about to change them for you. If change were possible, it would have happened long ago. Do you really think it's your turn now? Those elders belong to the Farrell family, of course, their loyalty lies there. To them, you're outsiders. You're Jansons. Why would they side with you against liberty? Holden's words grew sharper as he continued. They won't even stand by Catherine anymore, and she's their blood. And you think bribing them will change that? Dream on. If they were to support anyone from your mother's descendants, they'd choose Catherine over you in a heartbeat. At least Catherine commands respect, she has power. The major families in Wiltspoon show her courtesy. But you? If it were up to you, those same families would band together to crush the Farrell family into dust. Holden paused to catch his breath, the weight of his frustration palpable. The Farrell family isn't what it used to be, he added, his voice quieter but no less firm. They're barely clinging to their position among Jensburg's elite. How powerful do you think they really are now? His rant left him winded. At his age, with declining health and mounting stress, Holden could feel his strength waning. He'd stepped back from Jensburg's chaos for his own survival, retreating to his hometown to live out his years in peace. I've had enough of the Farrell family's mess, he muttered, taking a long sip of water to steady himself. I can't be part of it anymore, even if I wanted to. Decades spent as a son-in-law in the Farrell family had left him with nothing but scars, both physical and emotional. His wife, before her death, had nearly dragged him down with her. His biological daughter, Catherine, barely acknowledged him as her father. And while his sons showed some measure of filial piety, they lacked the competence to secure their futures. They're going to get themselves killed, Holden thought grimly. If Liberty doesn't finish them off first. If he'd known this would be his fate, he wouldn't have married into the Farrell family in the first place. After finishing his water, Holden resumed scolding his sons. His relentless words silenced them, leaving them too cowed to argue. When Holden finally paused, Marco spoke hesitantly. Dad, are we really going to stand by and watch everything Mom built fall into Liberty's hands? Just because she's a woman, she's more qualified than us. Her last name isn't even Farrell, it's Hunt. She can change her name anytime, Holden shot back without missing a beat. Big brother, Sage chimed in, listen to Dad. Come back home. It's the only way you'll survive. If you stay in Jensburg, you'll lose everything. Right now, Catherine's still around, and Liberty might show her a little respect. But once Catherine leaves, Liberty won't hold back. When the time comes, you won't even see it coming. Holden nodded in agreement. Your brother's right. The best path forward for the Farrell family is to let Liberty take over. She has the backing of some of the most powerful families in Wiltspoon, and she's tight with the Queen family here in Jensburg. Do you know what that means? The Queens are in-laws with the York family. Liberty's sister is Serenity. If Liberty becomes the head of the Farrell family, the Queens become your allies. That makes the Farrell family relatives of the Queens and, by extension, connected to the Yorks. You think those families will sit back and let the Farrell family collapse? Not a chance. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4004. Chapter 4004. The Farrell family members aren't fools, Holden said, his tone dripping with bitterness. They know how to assess the situation. Even if your sister doesn't willingly step aside, they'll make their move and back Liberty. They'll push her to take over as the head of the family. Holden shook his head. The major families in Wiltspoon are set on securing the Farrell family leadership. Whoever claims that position must align with their interests. Besides, Mr. Jimenez is still alive. Do you think he'll let it slide? He was Clarissa's eldest sister's assistant, and now he's determined to see justice done. Clarissa's crimes murdering her own sisters to gain power have come to light again. Do you really think the public, or the Farrell family for that matter, will allow her children to take over? It's out of the question. Marco slammed his fist against the armrest of his chair, his anger barely contained. Dad, I refuse to accept this. His voice rose. I don't care if I don't win the position of head of the family, but Liberty cannot take what's ours in the Farrell group. And what about the fortune Mom left behind? Catherine isn't sharing it equally with us. She can't keep it all for herself. At worst, I'll take her down with me. If I die, my children can still inherit Mom's estate. Catherine is unmarried and childless. If she dies, she loses everything. That's her weakness. With that, Marco stood abruptly, his chair scraping against the floor. He stormed off without waiting for his father's response, unwilling to hear more of Holden's warnings. His two younger brothers exchanged uneasy glances, then looked at their father. Holden sat shaking with anger, his face pale. After a moment's hesitation, they got up and followed Marco, leaving Holden to stew in his frustration. Once they were gone, Holden let out a bitter laugh, muttering to himself. Why? Why did I end up with these three rebellious fools? They're nothing but trouble, deaf to reason. Clarissa, you've ruined me even from beyond the grave. He cursed his late wife under his breath, his anger spilling over as he sat alone, wrestling with his despair. In Wiltspoon. At 3:30 in the afternoon, Duncan left his office and drove to the kindergarten where Sonny attended. When he arrived, it was still 10 minutes before 4 p.m. Children like Sonny, who weren't picked up by school buses, weren't allowed to leave until the official pickup time. Because of his mobility issues, Duncan stayed in his car, waiting for Sonny. As he watched the entrance, an elderly couple walked by, carrying a bag of KFC. Duncan immediately recognized them, Sonny's grandparents, Mr. and Mrs. Brown. The Browns weren't there to pick Sonny up. They didn't have the required pickup card, and the kindergarten staff didn't know them. But that didn't stop them from trying to get close to their grandson. They'd brought fried chicken, burgers, and fries, Sonny's favorites. Their plan was obvious: win him over with food, make him think fondly of them, and inch closer to regaining a connection with him. Duncan watched silently, making no move to greet them. The Browns despised him, and the feeling was mutual. But because they were Sonny's grandparents, Duncan maintained a polite distance, avoiding any direct confrontation. At 4 p.m., Duncan finally got out of his car. His bodyguard quickly unloaded the wheelchair and helped him into it. With the pickup card in hand, Duncan approached the teacher at the entrance. It was easier to let the staff bring Sonny out rather than struggle to go in himself. The Browns noticed Duncan right away. Mrs. Brown leaned closer to her husband, whispering. "Tell Hank he needs to start picking Sonny up when he has the time," she said, her voice laced with bitterness. "If he doesn't want to bring Sonny back to our house, he should at least drop him off at Serenity's. We can't let that stepfather get too close to Sonny." Her expression darkened as she continued, "Liberty isn't in Wiltspoon right now. Do you really think that man Duncan cares about Sonny? He's just pretending, putting on a show for everyone. Liberty's too blind to see it, but I'm not fooled. Sonny moved in with his aunt as soon as Liberty left. If Duncan were such a great stepfather, wouldn't Sonny want to stay with him? Instead, the poor boy is living with Serenity, who's pregnant and already exhausted. Serenity's due in a couple of months, and she's barely managing. Sonny's smart. He knows she's tired, but he still chooses to stay with her. That says it all. This man character is no good. He's just acting nice to fool Liberty and the others." Mrs. Brown's voice dropped even lower, her tone full of suspicion and disdain. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4005. Chapter 4005. I can't understand what Liberty is thinking. She left Sonny behind in Wiltspoon when she should have taken him with her after fighting so hard for custody. Mrs. Brown muttered under her breath, clearly frustrated. Deep down, she wanted Hank to take legal action and regain custody of Sonny. However, she knew doing so might not be in Sonny's best interest, and besides, Hank had no intention of listening to her. Liberty went to Jensburg, and there might be challenges we don't know about. If she could, she would have taken Sonny with her. She cares deeply about his education and has done a great job raising him, Mr. Brown said with a more measured tone. Although he wasn't particularly fond of Duncan, he couldn't deny that the man loved Sonny. Sonny was naturally attached to Serenity, having spent much of his upbringing with her. And since Serenity was close to Duncan, it made sense that Sonny was fond of him too. Mr. Brown decided not to voice this observation. It would only trigger an argument with his wife, who seemed determined to resent Duncan. Look, Sonny's coming out, Mr. Brown said, nudging his wife. The couple's faces lit up with smiles as they hurried forward. Sonny! Sonny! Mrs. Brown bent down, arms outstretched, eager to embrace him. But Sonny stepped away, politely calling out, Grandpa, Grandma, before running toward Duncan. Uncle Duncan! Sonny exclaimed cheerfully, his bright voice freezing the smiles on Mr. and Mrs. Brown's faces. Without hesitation, Sonny wrapped his arms around Duncan, leaving his biological grandparents standing awkwardly in the background. Duncan scooped Sonny up and said warmly, Say goodbye to your teacher first, Sonny. After doing so, Sonny returned and beamed at Duncan. Did you behave at kindergarten today? Any homework tonight? Did you miss me? Duncan asked gently. I behaved super well. No homework today. I memorized everything. I can recite it all without looking at the book. And yes, I missed you, my mom, Aunt Saren, and Uncle Zach. I miss everyone. Sonny said with a sweet smile that could charm anyone. Duncan chuckled, clearly delighted. Lowering his head, he kissed Sonny's chubby cheek. Sonny giggled and touched his cheek, then teasingly said, Uncle Duncan, you need to shave. Your beard is scratchy. Duncan laughed. Got it, Sonny. From now on, I'll shave every day just for you. Mrs. Brown stepped forward again, attempting to hug Sonny. Sonny, Sonny. But Duncan's sharp gaze stopped her in her tracks. She withdrew her hand awkwardly and forced a smile. Mr. Lewis, may we speak to Sonny for a moment? Duncan replied coolly, that's up to Sonny. If he's okay with it, I won't stop you. Noticing the bag of food Mr. Brown was holding, Duncan frowned slightly. Uncle, Auntie, Sonny had a fever yesterday. The doctor said it was due to a sore throat. The fried chicken and chips you gave him the other day caused inflammation. And now you've brought him KFC again? If he eats this, he might get sick again. Please be more mindful of what you give him in the future. Mrs. Brown's face stiffened as she hurriedly touched Sonny's forehead. A fever? Sonny, are you okay now? Do you feel uncomfortable? You shouldn't go to school if you're unwell. Take a day or two off to rest. Honestly, he barely ate any fried chicken that day. How could just a little bit make him sick? Married at First Sight Chapter 4006. Chapter 4006. After checking Sonny's temperature and finding it normal, Mrs. Brown shot Duncan a suspicious look. Are you sure it wasn't because you've been feeding him poorly at home? Maybe the heat built up over time, and it's just convenient to blame us. We gave him his favorite fried chicken. How is that wrong? She crossed her arms, her tone turning accusatory. I know you don't like us seeing Sonny and want to keep him away from us. But we're his biological grandparents, connected by blood. Blood ties can't be replaced by someone like you. Fixing Duncan with a sharp glare, she continued, Sonny is my grandson. I have every right to see him and bring him food. You're just a stepfather, and you have no authority over this. Remember, Sonny's last name is Brown. His father is Hank Brown, not you. Duncan listened calmly, letting her vent. When she finally paused, he said evenly, Auntie, you're right. Sonny's last name is still Brown, and I have no intention of changing that. I've also never tried to stop you from seeing him. You're his grandparents, and that's a fact no one can erase. All I ask is that you avoid feeding him junk food. It's not good for his health. At home, we ensure his meals are balanced and nutritious. That's why he doesn't experience heat accumulation as you suggested. Mrs. Brown glared at him. So now you're saying it's wrong for us to let Sonny eat what he enjoys? You're the one taking care of him, yet he still got sick. How dare you blame us for his fever? Admit it, you're just looking for excuses to keep Sonny away from us. Turning to Sonny, she softened her tone. Sonny, don't listen to Mr. Lewis. He's not your real dad. He's only acting nice to impress your mom. When she's not around, who knows how he treats you? Stepdads rarely have good intentions. Before Duncan could respond, Sonny's small voice interrupted. Grandma, Uncle Duncan is a good man. Don't say bad things about him. Sonny said firmly, his little face serious. Aunt Saren takes care of me most of the time. Are you saying she doesn't love me either? Mrs. Brown was momentarily taken aback but quickly shifted tactics. Sonny, you're too young to understand. Adults aren't always who they seem. Do you want some fried chicken? Look, Grandpa and I brought your favorite. It's still hot. Eat it before it gets cold. She reached out again, trying to pull Sonny from Duncan's arms, but Sonny held on tightly. Mrs. Brown's frustration grew. If things continued this way, she feared Sonny would drift further away from them, even if his last name never changed. The thought of losing the only grandchild she would ever have filled her with both anxiety and resentment. In her mind, the blame lay squarely with Liberty and Duncan. Liberty shouldn't have left Sonny behind, and Duncan, well, how could any stepfather's love be genuine? Married at First Sight, Chapter 4007. Chapter 4007. I don't want it. I want to stay with Uncle Duncan. Sonny shook his head firmly, stepping away from his grandmother's outstretched arms. Turning to her, he said in his small, earnest voice, Aunt Lillian took care of me when I was sick. She said my throat was inflamed because I ate fried chicken, and that's why I got a fever. She told me not to eat fried chicken anymore. But she also promised that once I feel better, she'll fry some for me at home. She said homemade is safer than buying it outside, but I can only have a little bit. The boy's tone became even more serious. Grandma, I don't want to eat fried chicken from outside anymore. And you and Grandpa better not blame Uncle Duncan. He's really good to me. If you scold him, I won't like you anymore. Sonny's words were cutting. The bond between him and his grandparents was fragile, at best. For as long as he could remember, his grandparents had favored his cousin, Lucas. They would take away his toys and snacks, giving them to Lucas instead. That favoritism had left a lasting impression on Sonny. Although they had started treating him better recently, the damage was already done. He saw them only occasionally, and the emotional connection simply wasn't there. Now that Sonny was older and attending kindergarten, he understood more about the people around him. He knew who genuinely cared for him and who didn't. His grandmother, in particular, always felt insincere to him. "Sonny, how can you talk to your grandmother like that?" Mrs. Brown said, her voice trembling with sadness. "Grandma cares about you. Whatever you want, I'll buy it for you." But her sadness quickly turned to anger as she lashed out at Duncan. "It's you. You've been poisoning my grandson's mind. Mr. Lewis, no matter what you say or do, Sonny is still a part of the Brown family. You're so cruel, mark my words, you'll never stand up again for the rest of your life." Duncan's expression turned icy. He gestured to the bodyguards nearby. "Get this old woman out of here. I don't want to hear another word from her." "You wouldn't dare." Mrs. Brown spat, her voice rising in outrage. Her husband, Mr. Brown, chimed in, his tone laced with arrogance. "If you lay a finger on us, all we have to do is lie on the ground and cry foul. You'll lose everything." Duncan paused and waved off his bodyguards. They stood down, but his glare didn't soften. Just as Mrs. Brown began to smirk triumphantly, Duncan's voice cut through the room like a blade. I won't touch you. But do you think I wouldn't dare touch your children and grandchildren? His words wiped the smugness from her face. Let me remind you, he continued, his tone dangerously low, I wasn't always this civilized. When I was younger, I wasn't above doing whatever it took to get my way. Mrs. Brown paled. Duncan Lewis wasn't just any man, he was the fourth young master of the powerful Lewis family. His wealth, influence, and connections made him untouchable. If he wanted to make life difficult for her children, it would be effortless. Her daughter's business, which was doing decently well, could be destroyed overnight if Duncan chose to act. Without that income, how would her family survive? And Hank, he was already struggling. Once a man with a stable job, Hank had been ruined by the same powerful people his mother was now provoking. These days, he barely made ends meet as a rideshare driver. If Duncan took that opportunity away, Hank would have nothing left. Sensing the danger, Mr. Brown tugged on his wife's sleeve. Let's go home, he said, lowering his voice. Sonny is still young. He doesn't understand now, but he will when he's older. No one can change the fact that he's our grandson. The Brown blood runs through his veins. That's not something anyone can take away. Mrs. Brown hesitated, but the fear of losing what little her family had left forced her to retreat. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4008. Mrs. Brown sighed dramatically. Sonny, we're leaving now. But remember, if you ever want something to eat, just call us. We'll buy it and bring it over. And don't forget to visit us on the weekends, okay? Sonny stayed silent, refusing to respond. Annoyed, Mrs. Brown shot Duncan a venomous glare. You think you can just push people around because you've got power? Let's see how long that lasts. Bah! She spat on the ground before her husband dragged her away, muttering under his breath. Duncan stood motionless, his face an unreadable mask of cold anger as he watched them disappear. Uncle Duncan, don't be upset, Sonny said softly, tugging on Duncan's hand to get his attention. His childish voice carried a surprising note of wisdom. That's just how my grandma is. I remember when Lucas wanted to take my toys, and I cried because I didn't want to give them to him. My mom stopped him, but grandma wouldn't let it go. She yelled at my mom for the longest time. I still remember it. The little boy's words struck a chord with Duncan. Even at just 2 years old, Sonny had endured the unfairness and favoritism of his grandparents. Now, standing there at only 4 years old, Sonny reached up to touch Duncan's face gently. Aunt Saren told me that getting angry makes you get old faster. Uncle Duncan, I don't want you to get old. You should always stay the way you are now. Then, with a bright smile, he added, so don't be mad, okay? I promise I'll never eat the fried chicken Grandma buys for me again. Duncan couldn't help but laugh, though it was tinged with sadness. Being comforted by a child so young was both heartwarming and heartbreaking. He felt a pang of guilt for Liberty and Sonny, both of whom had suffered under the Brown family's cruelty. And then there was Hank, still bitter and jealous of him. Did the man even realize how ridiculous he looked? Hank had spent years prioritizing his parents' and sister's family, using his earnings to support them while neglecting his own wife and son. Yet now, he had the audacity to act like a loving father. The only saving grace in Sonny's life was Liberty's kindness and grace. Even after the divorce, she had never bad-mouthed Hank in front of Sonny. Because of that, Sonny still had some feelings for his biological father, a natural connection rooted in blood. Duncan tightened his arms around Sonny, his voice firm and full of promise. Sonny, I'll always be here for you. No one will ever bully you or your mom again as long as I'm around. I've got your back. Sonny nodded eagerly. Uncle Duncan, you'll protect my mom, right? And Aunt Saren too. Duncan leaned down, meeting Sunny's gaze. Of course, I'll protect your mom. But your Aunt Saren can take care of herself, you don't have to worry about her. Okay, Uncle Duncan, Sunny said with a satisfied smile. Then, tilting his head, he added, can you take me home for dinner? Duncan smiled back. Already handled. I called your Aunt Saren on the way here. She said after dinner, you can decide whether to stay at home overnight or go back to your aunt's house. Whatever you want, I'll make it happen. Sunny beamed at him, but then his face turned thoughtful. Uncle Duncan, we could live together, right? You could take care of me like a dad. But... Duncan's heart swelled at the thought, but Sunny's hesitation gave him pause. But what, Sunny? Sunny hesitated before blurting out, your house is, well, it's kind of cold and lonely. My aunt's house is so much livelier. Other aunts always come over to visit, and they're so pretty and nice to me. I like them. Duncan froze, momentarily speechless. By aunts, Sunny meant Serenity's friends, like Jasmine and the others. Duncan let out a resigned sigh. Well, Duncan muttered to himself, shaking his head with a wry smile, I guess Serenity's house wins in that department. Sunny giggled, blissfully unaware of Duncan's inner conflict. Married at First Sight Chapter 4009. Chapter 4009. Duncan called Serenity to let her know he was taking Sunny to the Lewis house for dinner and would bring him home later. Serenity had no objections. Duncan's help gave her a rare moment to enjoy some personal time with her best friend, Jasmine. With Jasmine 8 months pregnant, shopping trips had taken on a new meaning. The duo wandered through baby stores, where Jasmine stocked up on essentials for her soon-to-arrive little one. The sight of baby clothes and supplies was infectious. Serenity couldn't resist buying a slew of things for her baby and Sunny as well. As evening fell, Zachary and Josh arrived to pick up their wives. Unbeknownst to each other, both men had declined their social obligations for the evening, leaving Callum and the rest of the senior management to handle the events. Once the busiest of the bunch, Zachary and Josh had become remarkably skilled at shirking responsibilities in favor of spending time with their families. When Zachary stepped out of the car, he was greeted by the sight of Serenity and her bodyguards loaded down with shopping bags. The pile of purchases at her feet was almost comical. Why did you buy so much? And where's Sunny? Zachary asked, making his way over to her. I got carried away, Serenity admitted, handing him one of the bags. Duncan picked up Sunny earlier and took him to Lewis's house for dinner. He'll drop him off later. Jasmine and I decided to make the most of the afternoon and went shopping. Zachary glanced over at Jasmine, who was also juggling an armful of bags, and exchanged a knowing smile with Josh. Without a word, the men collected their wives and their mountain of shopping bags, piling everything into the car before heading home. Meanwhile, in Huyonville, Evan York stood outside the towering headquarters of Dew's Group, wearing a sharp black suit, a light blue tie, and a determined expression. In one hand, he clutched a bouquet of vibrant red roses. In his pocket, he carried 2 movie tickets. He had waited patiently for Abby to finish work, determined to win her back. Every day, Evan showed up with flowers, gifts, and invitations for dinner or a movie. And every day, Abby rejected him. Today was no different. The moment she stepped out of the building and spotted Evan, Abby accepted the bouquet without a word, only to spin on her heel, toss it into the nearest trash can, and snap a picture for her social media. Evan's pride took a hit, but only briefly. He quickly rebounded, reminding himself he had earned this cold treatment. After all, hadn't he wounded Abby's pride first? If he was being honest, Evan knew he deserved far worse. His grandmother, with her mischievous matchmaking schemes, had paired him with Abby from the start. But through her cryptic clues and penchant for drama, she had let him believe that Abby and Fox, the woman he had been chasing blindly, were 2 different people. Now, Evan was paying the price for his ignorance and disbelief. Grandma's probably laughing her head off right now, Evan muttered under his breath. She set me up to learn the hard way. The sound of the company doors opening pulled him from his thoughts. Employees poured out, heading to their cars, scooters, or setting off on foot. By now, Evan's presence was a familiar sight, no longer drawing the curious stares it once had. As they passed, the employees exchanged whispers. "That's him again, Vice President Du's admirer," one murmured. "They say he used to chase her before," another said, glancing at him. "I guess he's back for round two." Despite the murmurs, Evan stood tall, his resolve unshaken. For all her icy rejection, Abby was worth every effort. This time, he was determined not to miss his chance. Married at First Sight, Chapter 4010. Chapter 4010. The employees of Du's group couldn't help but feel conflicted about Evan York. At first, when he pursued their vice president Abby Du, it seemed genuine. But just as Abby began to open her heart to him, Evan abruptly confessed that he didn't love her. Instead, he turned his attention to someone else, only to fail in that pursuit and come crawling back to Abby. To many, his behavior was nothing short of insulting. What did Evan think of Vice President Du? Did he see her as some sort of backup plan? Abby wasn't just anyone. She was the cherished niece of the chairman, the beloved sister of the company president, and one of the most prominent figures in the Du family, one of the wealthiest families in Huyonville. As the second daughter of the influential Du clan, Abby had no shortage of suitors. She didn't need to tolerate such half-hearted devotion. But Evan wasn't concerned about what others thought of him. He stood by the company entrance, eyes glued to every car that drove out, determined not to miss Abby if she passed by. For half an hour, he carefully inspected every vehicle, checking license plates, peering inside, but Abby's car never appeared. Was she still in the building? Or had she skipped work that afternoon? Evan decided to reach out. He sent Abby a text, but there was no reply. When he called, she picked up briefly, curtly saying, "I'm busy," before hanging up. Her WhatsApp moments, once a window into her life, were now impenetrable. She had allowed him to add her back as a contact but kept him blocked from seeing her updates. While his sister-in-law and others could view her posts, Evan was left in the dark, unable to glean even the smallest hint of her whereabouts. Desperate for answers, he turned to the security staff at the front desk. "Excuse me, security brother, did Vice President Du come into the office this afternoon?" Evan asked, leaning into the security booth. The guard raised an eyebrow and smirked. "What did you call me? Security brother? Listen, I'm just a doorman. I don't keep tabs on the vice president. I don't know where she is, and even if I did, I wouldn't tell you." The guard's tone turned colder. "Don't you have her number? Call her yourself. Why are you asking me?" Evan pressed his lips together, taken aback by the guard's bluntness. But he couldn't argue. He knew all too well that Abby had given strict instructions. Evan York was not to be allowed into the building without her explicit consent. Even if it were freezing outside, even if he stood there shivering in the wind, he was to be denied entry. Everyone at the company knew about Evan's history with Abby. They didn't sympathize with him. Abby's orders were carried out without question. Feeling thoroughly dismissed, Evan muttered, "Thanks," before stepping back. He dialed Abby's number again, and once more, the call went unanswered. Not ready to give up, he sent her another message. "Evan, are you still working? Were you at the office this afternoon? I'm waiting for you at the entrance. Let me take you to dinner and a movie." To emphasize his sincerity, he snapped a photo of the movie tickets he had bought and sent it along. Then, out of habit, he clicked on her WhatsApp moments once more, only to be met with the same empty profile. The only thing visible was the landscape photo she'd set as her cover image. Evan sighed, his heart heavy. When he first pursued Abby, she hadn't been so cold. She was warm, kind, and open to him. But that was before he had broken her heart. He could still hear her words echoing in his mind, "You were the first man I ever loved. The first man I ever thought about marrying. And then you told me you couldn't love me, that your heart belonged to someone else." He had shattered her trust and crushed her spirit. For Abby, that rejection wasn't just a rejection of love, it was a rejection of her entire being. Evan knew he was to blame for the distance between them now. And while he regretted every moment that led to this, he also knew that rebuilding what he'd broken wouldn't be easy.